for joining us at the Business Growth Cafe, where each week we select from a menu of topics for a focused discussion with an industry expert to provide insights that can impact your business's growth. With your host, Angelo Ponzi.
I am Angelo Ponzi, your host here at the Business Growth Cafe, and thank you for joining us. Today at the cafe, I'm excited to be speaking with Matt Everett, CEO of World of Dance, to discuss the growth of this exciting reality show from its humble beginnings to a worldwide powerhouse. Matt, welcome.
Yeah, nice to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited. We met a few months back, I think it was.
Yep.
At the OC Fashion Show.
That's right.
Which you probably would have, if you don't know me, but nobody would have ever guessed I'd be there. And not only there that night, but for seven straight days at the fashion show. So now I'm a fashionista.
Right.
And looking forward to next year. So before we get going, why don't we talk a little bit about the relationship between you and World of Dance. And the reason I'm saying that, because we're going to do a two-parter with you, and so our next show is going to be more about your advertising agency or PR agency background as a CFO. But I want to focus on the World of Dance. Yes, I did say World of Dance, folks, and we're going to be demonstrating some dance moves later on in the show. So why don't you talk a little bit about your relationship and kind of how you got going.
Definitely. Well, I met the founder of World of Dance actually at another company. We were an entertainment company producing car shows, and it was a very successful show based here in Orange County. We grew that property to, I want to say, 30 shows or so, maybe more than that, here in the United States. And it was about getting these car guys who would put together these car crews, you know, spend thousands, sometimes tens of thousands of dollars customizing cars and then enter them into competitions. And then our company would host that competition and then build a lifestyle event around that. Okay. And we sold that company. I went on and started a career in the advertising world, as you just mentioned. Dave stuck around and eventually had this idea to try to build something very similar in dance. And at that time, the dance industry was very fragmented, and in many ways it still is, but he wanted to bring together all of the kind of urban and hip hop styles of dance into one format. And so his idea was to get all these dancers who were putting together these dance crews, who were putting together these routines to enter into dance competitions, just like the show company, and then build kind of the lifestyle of dance around that and create one event, if it was successful, to build a tour of those. So he started that, got about maybe eight shows into it, a couple years into it, and called me up and said, "Matt, I think I have something here." And I remember going to the very first show. It was in San Francisco. Jabberwockies was performing. And if you're not familiar with the Jabberwockies.
I am. I'm actually a fan of World of Dance. I've seen all three seasons and the Jabberwockies and the Kings. It's just, well, I mean, I am a fanboy here. So
awesome. Well, they were on America's Best Dance Crew, which is a television show on MTV, and have really become probably the most famous dance crew in the world. They have a Las Vegas residency. They wear the white masks,
right.
That may be, you know, that's their signature. But, you know, I went there not really knowing what to expect. I'm not a dancer. Neither is Dave, my partner. He's not a dancer. But when you're there and you see, first of all ages, all ethnicities, gay, straight, male, female, skinny, fat, everyone with a smile on their face, just kind of linking arms and just sharing this common passion. It is incredibly inspiring, and you want that to be successful. And so the moment I saw that, I'm like, I'm in. You know, how do I help make this into something bigger? So
how many competitions you said about eight or 13 competitions around the country at that point in time or worldwide?
Yeah. So at that time, it was mostly in the United States and a couple in Canada. And then today we actually have, I want to say, maybe 50 competitions in over 25 countries.
Okay.
And then they all produce qualifiers who can compete in the World Championships, which is held in Los Angeles every summer. So that's a huge part of the business. That's really still today where the brand actually touches people on a real, you know, level. All of the content is filmed. We were really one of the first dance competitions to film and publish it all for free on YouTube.
Okay.
Most dance competitions were filming, and then they were selling it to the dancers for $20.
Oh, jeez.
And so we were like, no, that's not who we are, and that's not the brand we're building, and it's certainly not consistent with the movement that we think that we're a part of and helping to lead here in the dance industry. So we put it all up there. We had a number of videos go viral. We've had videos in aggregate in the billions of views. Mm. We weren't, if people were taking our content and ripping it and putting it up on their own channel, we weren't taking it down. If they were putting it up on Facebook or their own pages, we weren't telling them no. We were like, we want as much of this out there as possible. We are a platform for these dancers, and so as much exposure as we can provide to them, the better. We also did have some sponsors that were on the backdrop, so hey, you know, that's a little extra nice benefit too, for them.
So they get all these competitions, and people are obviously winning. Is that like the feeder team, if you will, using a baseball analogy?
To the television show?
Yeah.
Certainly, a number of the winners, all of the winners are introduced to the casting team that is auditioning talent for the show. It's not that you win and you're automatically on the show, although the winner of the World of Chance championships for each of the last couple seasons has been on the television show. So,
okay. So I'm just trying to understand the process then. So I win the competition and it gets me an audition.
Yeah.
And then there's a process once again of screening people out. I mean, one of the things I want to say about the show, if you haven't watched the show, it is fantastic. I mean, not only my wife and I watch it, but my son, he's going to cringe, my 25-year-old son will sit and watch it because it is just amazing to see the talent. And this year's show, the talent was unbelievable.
Yeah.
It really was. So that process of vetting, if you will, who does that and how does that work?
Yeah. Well, so the World of Dance competitions that we still operate are still predominantly only the hip-hop and urban styles of dance.
Okay.
And we were very successful at bringing those worlds together. There was the kind of like the b-boy breakdance scene, if you will, who are outside of studios. And, you know, they're getting together and there is a very vibrant community of those dancers. And then you have those that are in, you know, the studios who are, you know, choreographing and, you know, practicing routines. And so there's that whole community. But then there's the ballroom and tap and, you know, salsa and cabaret and all these other styles of dance. And the television show, one of our goals was, how do we produce a dance competition where you can have all styles of dance represented? And a lot of people didn't believe that was going to be possible. And it certainly, it was a challenge to figure out how do we make them all feel like they belong together. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons, or one of the ways we did it, was to make sure that there was a certain amount of swag factor in the music and energy and the what is part of the creative of each routine. And I think that has really worked out very well for us. The process to get on the show, certainly our competition produces lots and lots of talent, but there is a separate and distinct third-party organization that is responsible just for auditioning talent. We get thousands of submissions every season. They, you know, share an application and a video, and then they're invited back to audition live. And then I think there are probably 300 or 400 total dancers that are invited to be part of the initial kind of, you know, qualifier round. Okay. And then obviously we're filtering it down from there.
How far in advance is this going on before you make the decision of who's going to be on the show and then obviously the filming of the show?
We're already working on casting for season four and have been for the last couple months.
And season four will break when?
We will be in production probably beginning of 2020, and an air date hasn't been set yet.
Okay. All right. Well, fantastic. Talking about its humble beginnings in a sense, and certainly we are 3 seasons heading into 4 seasons. So let's talk a little bit about business growth.
Yeah.
So when you think about your responsibility with the World of Dance, right? So I'll call it your business.
Yeah.
What keeps you up at night when thinking about to continue this trajectory of growth?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, it's interesting. The pursuit for a dancer is a creative one, largely. When we when we, I remember getting involved and I was trying to figure out, you know, what is our purpose here? What is the reason for us to do this? Like, why are people responding to our brand and our organization? Like, what is happening here? And when we kind of peeled that back and, you know, we talked to folks, we really kind of discovered that it was largely about creative expression. Mm-hmm. And I think the entrepreneurial process to me is a very creative process. And I think, you know, Dave and I, although we're certainly pursuing building a business that makes money and can grow and continue to invest and provide, you know, a nice livelihood for a lot of people, it's still a creative process. And so for us, it's how can we build and create something that we're proud of, that, you know, has a legacy, that is a platform that inspires people to come together and share this common passion. And so, you know, the growth aspect of us is first driven by that mm-hmm. measure of success, not by just, you know, how do we make more money?
Right. Yeah. Okay. I was going to say, you know, when if you're from the agency side, so, and I'm from the agency side, yeah. as soon as I hear creative, planning and strategy is not what I normally associate with my creative directors.
Yeah.
Right. So do you approach this more from a creative standpoint? And again, I know you're a CFO, so yeah. I'm going to say you don't.
Yeah.
Because the numbers are important. Obviously, you have to be able to fund and do all the things you need to do. So do you guys, Dave, right? Do you sit down and develop that next year plan, the 2-year plan, and what the strategy is, expansions, you know, the new road shows, and
definitely.
The contest, and
definitely, yeah. I mean, we still go through the very typical planning, annual planning exercise. We do have, you know, a 5-year plan, and you know, now we have more stakeholders that we're working on with those plans. So certainly, that has expanded and it's become now a fascination of ours to figure out how do we, you know, turn World of Dance into this global dance empire, if you will. Mm-hmm. And there's so many opportunities for us to take this brand and, you know, to impact the world in a number of dance and non-dance, non-endemic verticals. So that makes it an incredibly rewarding and fun business to be a part of, because there are so many things that we can do and so many different businesses to either be a part of or to find partners who know more than we do and, sure. you know, to enter into some joint venture. As we just recently did in dance fitness, we found a company that was doing some really amazing things in dance fitness, and we didn't know anything about that business, but we felt like World of Dance, the brand, needed to be in the fitness space. And so finding them and figuring out a way to essentially acquire and join forces to use the World of Dance name to help them kind of get to the next level is a big project for us right now.
Okay. Some of the other singing reality shows, I'll call it, have live finales.
Yes.
Or live at some point in time, but you do not. Is that, the question is why, and is that something that you're going to be moving towards?
I don't think it's something that is probably in the cards right now. It is something that we've discussed, and it's certainly, we have expertise in the live event kind of creation and production world, so we would love to be able to do that. But I just think because of the format and the way in which you know, we're currently producing the show, mm-hmm. it just hasn't made sense. I will say that in the Philippines, we have a World of Dance Philippines format.
Okay.
And they did a live show and a live finale, and I thought it was actually pretty successful. So I do think that there is a way to do it. Their production budgets are very, very tiny. And so they were doing it, you know, and even though they had some incredible talent and some incredible personalities that were part of the show. But, you know, for us, it just hasn't made sense.
Has the number of submissions continually gone up? I imagine it has, based on the success of the show.
Certainly. I think it's interesting because initially there was tremendous amount of interest from the urban and hip hop world where, you know, we kind of, you know, we're born out of, and now we see the most energy coming from outside that world. And I think a lot of those folks who have been part of the television show, we've invited to come and perform at our competitions or events, and they've just described how incredible it is to be able to be on that stage and to be able to perform in a way that most of those dancers never have the opportunity mm-hmm. to. Because really, you know, when you go to a World of Dance competition, it is unlike anything you've seen. I mean, the amount of support that everyone has for each other, even though it is a competition,
sure.
It's not. I mean, it is really just this shared love. It's this community that just everyone is embracing, you know, everyone that's on that stage.
Well, it's interesting when I watch the show and you see everybody behind the scenes and the other groups are talking.
Yeah.
And you can tell it's a competition, but then all of a sudden you'll do other cuts as you get later in the show and you see people hugging and supporting each other. And I found that with the contemporary and the two sisters that were tapped at, I mean, they were phenomenal.
Yeah.
That there's also tremendous emotion that I feel as a viewer really brings me into. And some of these, you know, it's like, okay, they sang another song. I don't really care.
Yeah.
But there's something about the world of dance, and I am not a dancer, and never have been, and don't profess I will ever be, even though my wife wants me to go to the, you know, one of the dance studios so we can do some...
Angelo, everyone is a dancer. Everyone, they may say they're not, but when they're alone and there's music on, they want to move their body. That's the amazing thing. And music and dance are primal, and people just, they... We've been taught, and our society has unfortunately created fear of embarrassment, of dancing in front of others. But it is something that is really, truly a natural thing. And if you dance, it will make you happy. And so I encourage everyone, if they're a good dancer or a bad dancer, just to move their body, turn on some music as loud as they can, and just enjoy it because it will help them feel good.
Yeah. You know what silent disco is?
Yes.
So
it's incredible.
It's so, and so I say I don't dance, but
but you've done that.
I have done it now like 5 times.
All right.
Through my wife's company, and they do a lot of events. And
yes,
a lot of them they bring a guy, and he does silent disco, and it is funny, but really cool to look and see 30 or 40 or 50 people with headphones on just bebopping away and dancing like there is no tomorrow.
Yeah.
And yet, there's no music if you're standing on the outside looking. And you're right. It is absolutely so much fun. So my inhibition does go down when that happens. So it's. But I encourage, if you've never done silent disco, you've got to do that. So I'd be remiss if I didn't actually talk about the host. I mean, J-Lo and
Neo and
Neo
Derek
and Scott
this year.
How did you get to those three hosts versus... I mean, you didn't go, I want those three people. There must have been other considerations, but it's a great group, and they're really dynamic together, and I love it. But how'd you get there?
Well, first of all, when we were developing the show with NBC, of course, everyone, you know, believes that you need star power, and you really need anchor star power. And if you're going to put together a list of the most top choices to be part of a dance show like this one, Jennifer Lopez would be at the top of the list.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it just so happened that they had a relationship with Jennifer. She was doing a kind of a crime drama on NBC.
Oh, yeah.
And so they had an opportunity to present to her this opportunity. And she was, at the time, dating a choreographer. And that choreographer was... kind of a friend of the community and had judged at a number of our events and been a part of, you know, World of Dance. And Jennifer had been very aware of World of Dance, and many actual stars have actually recruited talent from our competitions. And that's been something that's, you know, been a part of our, you know, contribution to the community. So when she was presented with the opportunity, as has been told to us, she was like, World of Dance? Oh, I love World of Dance. And they were surprised, and of course, you know, really, you know, happy to hear that because we had really had some great conversations to that point. So once she got behind it, you know, greenlighting the show became much, much easier.
Yeah, I bet.
So
and certainly Derek, I mean, and his sister Julianne.
Yes.
Surprised they aren't bookending it, but
well, Julianne's been on as a mentor.
Oh, she has. Okay.
Yeah, but Derek's incredible, and honestly, so is Neo, and. You know, the viewers don't get to see all of the interactions between them, but honestly, like, they're all amazing people and incredibly charismatic, and we're just incredibly fortunate that we found those three individuals to help really drive the success of the show. Jenna Dewan, who was actually the host for the first two seasons.
Yeah, the first two seasons, yeah.
And she was incredible. It didn't work out scheduling wise for last season, but Scott Evans did an awesome job this past season. And so it's just they all really believe in what we're doing. They really want dancers to be able to have a stage and to share their craft. And, they provide incredible advice on and off camera to all of these young people who look up to them as, these idols. And these are the people who have achieved success in their eyes, mm-hmm. and the highest levels of it. So for them to share their time and their passions, is really a pretty special gift that they provide.
Yeah. And I think later on in the show, you start doing... I'll call them behind the scenes, right? And they're talking because you're in commercial break or they're setting up for the next dancers. And I always find that, that human interaction, right, that you don't get when they're judging.
Yeah.
And Jennifer's on the phone with her kids. I find that always amusing. Yeah. And it relates. I'm a mom, right? And I love
and
that.
And so is Neo. I mean, they just love their kids and they may have a really demanding work schedule, but they take the time to talk to them and stay connected to them. I think that's pretty awesome.
Okay. So, again, the show's about business growth.
Yeah.
What's been your biggest obstacle in growing the world of dance?
In the early days, we were certainly focused primarily on reinvesting every dollar we made in the brand and continuing to, get the name out there. And so it was all hands on deck, volunteers and interns and everyone, like any small business. It was just everyone's committed to this mission, and we're all just trying to figure out how to just keep going. And we didn't exactly know where it was going to go because it was still so young and, mm-hmm. and emerging. As we've had more definition, now there are so many things that we can do to really find the right ones to focus our energy around is a significant gamble. And so I think that's the one thing that, is we still spend quite a bit of time second guessing, is this really what we should, be pursuing? We had started to pursue music pretty heavily a couple of years ago, and also a magazine. Mm. And I remember both of those properties were ones we really believed in. We believed that music is obviously inextricably woven with dance. People generally don't dance to silence, although it has been done. in order to make money, especially on platforms like YouTube, you have to have licensed the music appropriately.
Right.
And so that is an obstacle for most dancers to be able to, make money with their craft, is because they are dependent on someone else's permission to let them make money, which is a very, very challenging thing.
And
it doesn't work in reverse, where the musicians actually get to make money off of the dancers without the dancer's permission. But the dancers don't get to do the same. So, we started pursuing this, music business. We didn't know what the music industry was like or even how it worked. We didn't know the difference between a label and a publishing company. And, we did start to put out some music and made a little bit of money, but didn't really quite know where that was going. And so we stopped. And then a couple years later, we kind of looked at the publishing money that we were making, and it turned out to be quite a bit more than we thought. And so we thought, this is really something that we should dive back into. And those types of decisions happen all the time, where it's, there's only so much capital to reinvest, and there's only so much time in the day for us to put into anything. So finding the right things to put our time in. I mean, that's for a business like ours, where we're trying to figure out, where to grow. I mean, that's just like any other entrepreneur.
Exactly.
It is like a canvas that we're painting. And so, what is it that we want to paint and where do we want to go? I think that's really what has to drive it.
Okay. I think we're down to last 2 minutes here. So one final and quick question, and well, hopefully the audience will carry over to part two with us, is as a business, product, TV, software, doesn't matter. What are kind of some lessons learned, one or two, that you would like to impart to the listeners?
From my experience at World of Dance, that's tough to distill all of the things that we've had to learn into a 2-minute answer, right? But the thing that I really emphasize, and I kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, was first of all, when you're building something as a business or creating something as an artist, I really think that one of the challenges we have in society is how we're defining success. And I think that the pursuit of that has its own rewards. Mm-hmm. And if we're purely focused in building a business because there's only the dream of making $1 million, that's either success, or if we don't do that, we're not successful. I think most people are not going to be successful. And the reality is that it's very difficult to be successful in business under that, you know, narrow definition.
Sure.
But when you start to realize that, you know, you can do something that actually makes a difference, that contributes, you know, value to your customers and potentially even to a larger community or society in whole, I think that you know you're able to actually put that energy into something that makes you feel like you are successful throughout that process. And so you'll want to keep doing it as long as you continue to, you know, earn those rewards.
All right. Well, fantastic. We have come to the end of this show. So why don't you tell the audience how they can connect with you on LinkedIn or whatever your social media or connection of choice is.
Well, certainly you can find more about World of Dance by Googling World of Dance and going to worldofdance.com and NBC's site. You can certainly connect with me on LinkedIn and Twitter at Matthew Everett. And I usually try to meet up with people if they want advice. So definitely, I'm around.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Matt. Before I signed off, I do want to remind folks this is part one of a 2-part interview. In the second part, we'll explore Matt's agency and business coaching expertise. So don't forget to tune in on that. Thank you again for joining us at the cafe today. You can find out more about me, read my blogs, or view my show videos at theponzigroup.com or connect with me on LinkedIn. And if your business is in need of a CMO, but you're not ready for a full-time person yet, connect with me. I'd welcome the opportunity to explore the benefits of using a fractional CMO. And of course, please subscribe to this show at the Business Growth Cafe. You can find us on all the major platforms around the world. Join me next week for lunch at the Business Growth Cafe.
Thank you for listening to today's discussion at the Business Growth Cafe with your host, Angelo Ponzi. Take a moment to subscribe to this podcast and visit our website at www.businessgrowthcafe.com. Read Angelo Ponzi's blogs at www.theponzigroup.com.